Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Wiederer.
You've got a guy with credentials, you got a guy with some qualifications, and now there's just, when done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Dan Wiederer joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check them out, aturo.com. Dan, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Happy London Week to you guys.
Yeah. When do you leave?
I don't leave till tomorrow, so okay. I'm a little bit of a straggler on this trip, but I will get there, and we'll see if the Bears can keep their momentum going.
Are you going with the Jags?
Yeah, Doug Peterson's going to stop by and swing by and pick me up, and then we'll roll over there, and I'll get on their body clock.
Well, Biggsy's already there, as you know, and he sounded really thrilled to be driving an hour and a half into the English countryside to find the Bears hotel.
That sounds about accurate. I'm only getting texts from Brad at this point, and so I'll take inventory on the hour just to see how he's acclimating over there.
So, Dan, let's start with the breaking news. Jaquan Brisker out for Sunday's game. Who does that elevate, and what do you think it'll have in terms of an effect?
Well, look, like Elijah Hicks seems to be the guy that would be next in line to be able to step into that role and do the things he was able to do a year ago when he was playing a fair amount with Brisker and Eddie Jackson dealing with their injuries last year. He's got experience. He can do things there. I have bigger long-term concerns about Jaquan Brisker because this will be the third consecutive season in which he's missed a game and possibly multiple games with a concussion. And so when you have these head injury issues and the repeated head trauma that Jaquan's had in his first 3 years in the league, you have to start looking through a bigger picture lens. And I do think it was responsible of the Bears to declare him out early in the week and not leave the door open, even a crack that he was going to try to make his way over there. But you really got to stop and take a long, hard look at how fast you try to come back when you've had repeated head injuries like Jaquan has.
Yeah, I just wonder, this does allow him 3 weeks, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't play in this game, and they're off next week, and then perhaps he's able to come back. But he did miss a couple of weeks the last time, so I just don't know what it means in terms of when he is back, et cetera.
Well, in his rookie season, Mully, also, he suffered what was essentially two major hits in the game against the Falcons, was evaluated both times, cleared to return to the game, and then ended up missing the following two games, and talked when he came back from that concussion about how challenging those 2 weeks were and just kind of dealing with that. And so it's scary stuff, you know, and it's easy to kind of minimize when you're in the thick of a football season with a team that seems to be getting ready to get on the up escalator here. And you've got to try to make some responsible decisions when emotion is involved. And so you just hope that there's the right people around to kind of steer this thing responsibly as Jaquan tries to figure out his best path back into action.
This segment with Dan Wiederer brought to you by TimberTech Decking and Railing. Everything wood should be. Visit TimberTech.com. So, Dan, it's a tough question, easier said than done, but if he does come back and he does obviously return to the Bears lineup, does he have to change the style with which he plays? Does he have to maybe be more conscious of his head and helmet? And it's a hard thing to ask at a game that goes at that pace, but you do hear that conversation about guys who are prone to concussions.
I just don't know if you can change. You know, it's just one of those things that's way easier said than done to say, okay, play different than you've played your entire life. Jaquan's strength is the passion he plays with, the aggression he plays with, and the way he's able to be in attack mode at all times. And so I don't know how you would go about that. It's an easy question to ask. It's a hard one to answer because I just don't know what the method would be to getting a guy in real time to slow down and subscribe to the hits principle while not hitting too hard.
You know, we also heard from Ryan Poles talking about how Larry Borum is close to coming back. I mean, it sounds like, you know, not this week, close to coming back. And obviously the same thing with Ryan Bates. He's getting healthier is the way he put it. So I don't know what that means. I would imagine with the bye week, you hold off on that sort of thing. But you got Tevin Jenkins, who made the trip. He's got an ankle. He wasn't in a walking boot after the game, and he went into the game with ribs. I'm just curious, did you, when you went back and looked at the tape, did you see enough from Bill Murray to believe that he would be a capable starter in this game? Do you think he will start in the game, or do you think they'll try to go with Jenkins? And Nate Davis is just an afterthought at this point, maybe a backup piece until you get to the end of the season and you get rid of the sunk money.
I agree with the latter point for certain. Now, as it relates to Jenkins and Murray, it'd be interesting to see kind of how Tevin navigates the week. Obviously went into last week's game with a ribs issue, and then he came out of it with a ribs issue and an ankle issue. And so you got to try to find your way back to steady ground there health-wise. I will say that I was more impressed than I expected to be with Bill Murray. I thought he played with a notable edge. Yeah. Throughout the time that he was on the field. And we talked in the first part of the season is, you know, do they have one of those guys, right? Like where you can feel the nastiness every time he breaks the huddle. And Bill Murray played that way on Sunday. And so it's certainly something that might be worth a longer look if you're the Bears coaching staff and you see where you go from there. You're going in on Sunday to play a Jacksonville defense that is bad. I mean, when you talk about timing guys where you have a rookie quarterback who needs or can certainly benefit from a confidence surge at this point of his development, this string of games here recently has been really, really friendly, and this is the latest in the long line of them where you've got a Jaguars passing defense that is pretty, pretty poor right now and should give you some opportunities to make some plays.
Dan, who will have the edge at quarterback on Sunday?
I'm delaying here because I don't know what the right answer there is. Obviously Lawrence has a major advantage in experience and knowing what he's seeing. He's played in London before. He knows how to navigate the week probably more than Caleb does, and so that experience is a factor. But he certainly hasn't lived up to what Jacksonville thought he was going to be when they took him number one overall. And he's, you know, he's been paid, and you have all these other things playing in your favor. But I can't answer that, which is probably good news for the Bears that they're number one pick and his, you know, sixth start is in the same conversation with the guy who's been in the league for as long as Trevor has.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, I think that when we talk about Trevor Lawrence, it is one of these deals where you saw promise, you saw a guy make the playoffs, you saw a guy get paid, and now I don't know what we're seeing, and I don't know how to feel about the head coach. Because I thought that guy was a hell of a coach, and I thought that he was going to have success there. And it's just weird, Dan, that seems like a cursed draft class all of a sudden.
It is. It's crazy, and it's a reminder of how premature declarations on quarterbacks arriving is so just ridiculous in this day and age in the league. I mean, if you talk to me in the middle of January of 2023 with Trevor Lawrence, you know, beating the Chargers with a dramatic comeback win in the playoffs, going to Arrowhead, playing through, a pretty significant challenge there and doing what he could to keep them in a game with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, you thought that they weren't only on the escalator, they were on the elevator. And now here we are a few years later, and it looks like, oh man, you know, you could be considering a reboot in that organization. And so that's why I've laughed through the month of September and early October with all these discussions about, you know, did the Bears make a mistake drafting Caleb Williams? Should they have taken Jaden Daniels instead? We can't answer these questions for 3 years. You know, it's going to take three seasons of production and track record and sample size to even come close to casting an informed verdict. And so hopefully we're all patient enough to kind of to ride this roller coaster the way it needs to be ridden.
So let's go back to the big story, because big picture wise, you wonder this: if Jaquan Brisker is out for an extended period of time, how different is this defense without him?
I mean, it's different, but I think a year ago, again, Elijah Hicks stepped in and you didn't notice him, which was a good thing, right? Like he came in and you weren't like, oh man, the backup safety is getting beat left and right and doesn't know where he's supposed to be. This defense is playing so well right now. And I think, what are we up to, 11 games now of allowing 21 points or fewer? That's going to keep you in football games every single week. You've got playmakers on all three levels. You've got that closer's mentality when closing is needed. And then last week there was no closing needed because the offense did its thing and you just held the opponent down so far that you just got the coast through the fourth quarter with a 20-point lead or more. And so I wouldn't be overly concerned that you're going to feel Brisker's absence to a significant level, particularly just given all of the number of guys that you have making plays. And you saw that Sunday against Carolina, the number of guys who made impact plays in that football game told you everything you need to know about this defense.
Dan, we heard from Kevin Warren this morning as well. And he talked about the stadium yet again. This is obviously his baby and everybody wants to know about it. And he's asked about it. Why do you think he keeps insisting that the downtown stadium is the way to go, and he keeps kind of hoping that he's going to convince someone of that? Do you believe that the $2.7 billion ask will eventually be delivered, if indeed he asks often enough or nicely enough? What is your take on the way that he seems to prefer downtown to the land they own in Arlington Heights?
Yeah, to me, Molly, it feels like a passion in the vision, right? And Kevin has been very married to what he thinks could be something that, through his eyes, would be really, really special down by the lakefront. Now, the other question you asked about how are you going to get it done and who are you going to convince to make it happen is one that's much more detailed and layered. And I just haven't seen any progress in that front to believe that they're going to be able to get momentum moved in that direction in order to put a shovel in the ground in 2025, which Kevin has not only insinuated is going to happen, he's been pretty emphatic that it will happen. And so now you have to show and not tell, you know, and that's what the upcoming 6 to 8 months are going to be about. You got to show progress on the stadium front, and you've got to give people an idea that there is actually forward momentum, because for too long we've just kind of been stuck in this holding pattern with a lot of vision and no progress. And so that's Kevin's responsibility to create that progress and to create that forward momentum. And to this point, there hasn't been a whole lot of it for a lot of different reasons. And you've got a lot of, you know, political factors in play and a lot of things that come into the equation. But pretty soon you're going to have to start to show direction and momentum on that project.
Dan, do you think somebody got to Shane Waldron after the Colts game? Because after calling 60 pass plays down in Indy and seeing the results of that disaster, the last 2 weeks have been surprisingly balanced, pretty efficient, and certainly Caleb Williams has taken care of the football, but it's been a game plan that has allowed him maybe to be more careful.
Well, do we think someone got to Shane Waldron? We know people got to Shane Waldron. The leadership, Matt Eberflus, a lot of people were in Shane Waldron's ears as they crossed that bridge from the Colts loss into the Rams week. And you know that there was some very forward conversations, some very forthright conversations that were had inside that building about what wasn't working and what folks thought could be helpful to getting things to work. One of Shane's greatest strengths when he came in here, according to those who hired him, was that he was going to be adaptable, that he was going to be open-eared and not stubborn and capable of adjusting to his personnel, to each week's matchup, to the dynamics at play. And he was going to be capable of listening to people around him to change when change was declared needed. And certainly they've been good the last 2 weeks in rallying. Now, the opponents have given them some, again, favorable matchups, and you're going to get another one Sunday in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And you just hope that you can continue to build momentum in a way that creates an identity for this offense that you can lean into. Really nice game overall. I mean, that Panthers defense was really bad, and then they were bad and injured by the time that game was over, but the Bears handled their business in that, and that should give them a little bit of added belief as they handle their business in London.
So we look at this game, and you know, obviously it's a game that is winnable on paper.
Oh, yeah.
That you feel pretty good about, again, that their passing defense isn't great. You feel like the strides the Bears have made over the last couple of weeks can continue in London. Is it you know, they've been good at home. Is it is it different for them? It's a home game technically, but is it different because of travel? Is there anything? Yes. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, Molly, that like if this game was at Soldier Field, I wouldn't even hesitate
right.
to go lock in the Bears as winners. But there's so many different factors here with travel and how quickly you can get your focus there and how quickly you can get your body clock acclimated. And can you have the type of preparation week that you need to play this opponent? That's the X factor in all this. But when you look at the matchup, the Bears defense should be able to continue playing as well as it has through the first five games of the season. And Ryan Nielsen is in his first year coordinating this Jaguars defense. The last time the Bears saw him was on New Year's Eve when the Falcons came to town and Justin Fields and company laid like 430 yards and 37 points on him. And so he plays a heavy dose of man coverage with a secondary that really isn't good enough to play a heavy dose of man coverage. And so there's going to be opportunities all over the place for explosive passing plays. They've allowed three 300-yard passers through the first five games of the season. One of the guys who didn't get there was Josh Allen, who threw four touchdown passes and basically took most of the second half off. And so you understand here that if you're Caleb, go ask Fields and Mitch Trubisky what they thought about getting a heavy dose of man-to-man coverage against a defense that couldn't play it. And you understand that there's an opportunity here for a real production springboard for the Bears offense, and they better be capable of taking advantage because they're going to have plenty of opportunity on Sunday.
I take it you're done reading DJ Moore's body language now?
No, I'm going to keep reading it. I'm going to keep reading it because 1 week isn't enough to kind of to you know suppress everything. I did think that he needed that on Sunday. I think he and Caleb together needed that. They needed that pressure release that came with not only having 100-plus yard outing, but scoring twice and hitting on a couple big plays that turned the stadium upside down. And that feels good, right? And so then you take those feel-good vibes and you go forward with them instead of dealing with the tension of, oh, man, when am I going to get unlocked? But this is a long process, and it's a long season. And so DJ's ability to kind of manage his patience and his frustration levels and everything that comes with playing alongside a rookie quarterback are going to be part of the focus for a while. Hopefully he just continues to have games like he had Sunday and this all becomes pretty moot pretty quickly.
I know it's early in the week and you haven't made your pick yet. I'm just curious. We talked to Dave Wannstedt yesterday. He doesn't like the spot for the Bears, if that's a way of putting it. He just was a little hesitant about it. I don't think he likes this situation as much as some of these other games. Do you understand that idea? Do you agree with him in any way? Do you lean one way or another?
Fill me in a little bit more about what worries him.
I think it's just kind of where you are and what the team yeah. looks like and you know Jacksonville having been there as many times as they have, etc. I think it's more the yeah. spot than it is the game. It's not necessarily the matchup. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Like
I do know what you're saying.
It gave me pause, to be honest with you, hearing him.
The London factor is the one thing that's just stuck in the back of my brain on like how are the Bears going to be able to navigate this as you know, quote unquote first timers. Obviously they've got several people on the coaching staff and in the front office who have done this before and they can figure out the best recipe to what works for them. But matchup wise, it's favorable. And again, if this game was by the lakefront on Sunday, I'd pick yeah. the Bears by, 8 to 10 points and not even second guess it. But there is a lot of factors that go into it. I know for myself individually going over in 2019, like I was wrecked by the jet lag and my body wasn't right the entire time I was there. And so a lot of people respond differently to that. And when you have to go out and play a high intensity football game for 3 hours on a Sunday, and you're not quite where you want to be, there's a small margin for error. And so I get what Dave's saying. I still think that this matchup's really favorable. And as long as the Bears don't go in overconfident from what they did against Carolina, they should be able to handle their business on Sunday.
Great stuff, Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, guys, we'll talk soon.
That is Dan Wiederer, and we talked to his colleague Brad Biggs earlier. Our segment with Biggs, he was sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years, estwing.com.
Now we can talk baseball.
Yeah, we can get to our baseball segment that
We'll get some audio. We'll yeah. work a little bit of everything in. I also have another question for you.
Good.
About a mystery sport.
I think I know what I know what that one is. Hey, before Chicago takes on Jacksonville in London, make sure you're tuning in Saturday morning from 9 to 11, a special day and time for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score. It's presented by Aurelio's. You can join Olin Krutz, Patrick Manley, and some guy named Mully, and we'll get you set for the big game the next day. Then immediately following the game on Sunday, we'll be here for you. We'll have instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show presented by Sony Pictures, Wonderverse Chicago, and Timber Tech Decking and Railing, and all of that can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. Mully and Haw on The Score.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And it'll be Cody Clemens now to pinch it for Edmundo Sosa. Got it. And this amazing run for the Miracle Mets shows its most dominant performance of the playoffs so far to take a 2-1 series lead. And they are one win away from an improbable trip to the National League Championship Series.
The payoff pitch. Padres take game three. Take command in this best of five, leading it 2-1.
And if you think it was loud tonight, wait till tomorrow.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
So we got baseball today.
It's a big deal. It's elimination day, buddy.
You got two series that could be over.
Yeah, but they could also go to five.
The other two going on. So we've got a lot of AL Central involvement today.
Too much.
Yes, got the Guardians and the Tigers. That starts out.
I'd like the Tigers.
We got 2, 4, 6, and 8. That's what we've got today.
Yes.
Got the Guardians and the Tigers. Got the Phillies and the Mets, the Yankees and the Royals and the Dodgers and the Padres. Your Padres, because it looks pretty good right now. We've got two ex-White Sox pitchers, two ex-White Sox and Cubs pitchers. Guys who have been paid by both organizations.
Right. How about that? Isn't that funny?
Dylan Cease going for the Padres against the Dodgers tonight.
Thanks, Mom.
Jose Quintana going against Suarez and the Phillies today. I hope that both ex-Chicago guys go deep and they both win.
I like it.
I do too. Be fun.
Yes.
The Mets, that's a fun story. I know I picked the Phillies. Dustin picked the Phillies. I don't like to ruin our predictions, but that's a good story for baseball, I think. The cringe alert, Miracle Mets, Mully, are about to eliminate the Phillies.
The only problem with calling them the Miracle Mets is that, number one, it's a throwback to a horrible season in Cubs history. But number two, I don't remember it, so I'm not haunted by it, but I know some who are. But the other thing is, They have the second highest payroll in baseball. They are paying for this. This is not like the Detroit Tigers, this young team where their best player is no longer with them and he isn't their best player.
Great contrast. It's a great contrast.
It's really important contract.
The two best stories, I think, in the respective leagues, the Mets, $342 million payroll.
Ridiculous.
The Tigers, $18.8 million.
Come on.
18.8. They're probably still paying an ex-pitcher that much money. But Steve Cohen, this is the best team money could buy, and they have a chance to eliminate the best team in the National League. Well, the Phillies and the Dodgers, either one of those teams, they're considered the best, and they both could be eliminated today. That is cool.
It's cool, and it's wild that, like, I don't know if you've seen Steve Cohen out in front of the ballpark, posing with fans, like hanging out. Like he's doing some cool stuff. He's doing it. He's kind of got the Tom Ricketts thing down.
Tom Ricketts' Man of the People thing down.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
He's interacting with fans. He is a fan himself. He certainly has treated this team and like it is a toy.
Yeah.
You know, I'll spend here. I'll spend there. I'll spend everywhere. They have bought now an opportunity to get into the NLCS. they would play, well, if they play, if it's Mets-Padres, I would love that matchup. The Mets, they have Quintana against Suarez, and the other game is Cease against Bullpen Day. The Dodgers, with the, on the brink of elimination, with all the money, they're the highest paid team in baseball, the highest payroll at $357 million. They're going with a Bullpen Day because they have so many injuries to their starting rotation.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think one of the keys to this series and maybe one of the real pleasant surprises if you're a Padres fan is how good their bullpen is. Their bullpen, it's not just their starting pitching. Their bullpen has been excellent.
Speaking of the bullpen and ex-Chicago connections, in that bullpen you will find Jeremiah Estrada, who's pretty good. And you know who was a former employer of Jeremiah Estrada? The Chicago Cubs. They couldn't fix him in the pitching lab. They couldn't get the most out of him. So he was an ex-Cub, and he landed in San Diego. A lot of Cub fans look at that and think, okay, that's one that got away.
Yeah.
That's one that got away.
Yeah, Jeremiah Estrada, pretty good.
High leverage reliever. Dustin, is he the one that got away? Not Schwarber-type quality, not like that one that got away. But Estrada, you look at him with a little bit of envy and regret, right?
I'm sure. I'm just surprised they missed that badly on that the evaluation. But there, we've seen it so many times in baseball, right? Look at what's going on with Kopech. And sometimes it's just change of scenery,
that's
right?
That's a good comp.
Or it's a different coach, a different city, a different team. And all of a sudden you feel like, ooh, man, my career might be in the balance and something just clicks.
You know, Tanner Scott has struck out David's guy Otani in each of the three games they've played. He struck him out once in each of the three. They've got an Otani specialist. So late in the game, instead of worrying about that guy, you just bring in Tanner Scott and he strikes him out.
Maybe.
That's all you got to do.
At your own risk. Otani is still likely to go off.
They got that
lineup
the kryptonite.
Could still wake up. They could still.
They got kryptonite.
Last night, they were sloppy. And the reason they lost that game, besides, okay, a lot of things contributed.
Yeah.
Great atmosphere.
Yep.
Frenzied crowd that got everybody worked up. And the Dodgers, I wonder how much they made mistakes they don't typically make. Freddie Freeman throws a ball, and Manny Machado just got into the base path, and it hit him. And he goes to third base, and the floodgates opened. And then double play ball. No, can't get the force out at second. No, he beats it out at first. The Dodgers made some simple fundamental defensive mistakes that cost them. The Padres score six runs. The Dodgers hit the grand slam to catch up with almost catch up 6-5, and they hold on to that one-run lead the rest of the game because of the bullpen you referenced.
Yeah.
That's a good win for San Diego. Bad loss for the Dodgers because they blew it.
And was it Michael King that started in that game?
Yep.
So how did they get him? Remind me. Wasn't that the Soto
deal? That was the Soto trade.
I'm just saying.
That was the Soto trade.
What you want is you want guys to live up to whatever deal you made.
You're right. Did you see Walker Buehler lose it in the dugout? Wasn't that something? He went ballistic in the dugout. He went full Carlos Zambrano in the dugout. That was crazy. I would be ticked off too. What happens to the Dodgers if they lose and get eliminated today? Is Dave Roberts back? Is Dave Roberts back again, the best manager who can't win a 162-game season World Series?
I would not be too pleased about I. You know, the problem is that you can't have a guy like him be as important in the series as he's come to the forefront to be, you know, complaining about Manny Machado and seemingly getting Manny Machado better as a result of it, right? Wouldn't you have been better off
ignoring it?
Yes.
Yes.
Because it was it felt like he was trying to get him suspended.
You know what?
And when they didn't suspend him, and maybe they should have, David, maybe they should have if baseball had any cojones. But they didn't.
No, and then, I'm glad they didn't. And that'd been too much.
You want your best players there. But I'm just saying, there was a feeling that he got involved in that, and all he did was poke the bear.
But that's a great point. You're the Dodgers. You have a payroll unlike any other.
Yes.
You are paying Ohtani more than...
You're paying Ohtani $750 million that doesn't count
now. It's deferred.
Now.
It's deferred.
I'm just saying.
You milked the system. You found the shortcut. You $357 million worth of talent. Don't punch down. Don't get drawn into that nonsense. You fell for it. You took the bait. Now you got in your heads. Now you're making defensive mistakes. Now you look like a bad team. You're not a bad team. So they're on the brink of elimination for a reason. They allowed themselves to get to that point. So I hope that the Padres finish the job. Petco Park looked alive.
Wow.
It's a Citi Field looked alive.
Wow.
It's awesome.
I can't believe that you are like openly cheering for the Padres to win that thing. I mean, you know, I'm sick of the Dodgers.
I realized that last night.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm hearing. I would think at the very least you would hope that it went five games and you got to the elimination game. But I love that you feel that way because I think what's going to happen once again, maybe they get a run this time. And maybe it comes down to your guy, Shohei Ohtani, comes out, and the Ohtani Slayer finishes him off.
Okay, that'd be good. Thanks.
That's right. He's not coming here.
All right, before we get out of here and get to transition, I need to ask you this question. So yesterday, the Chicago Fire made big news.
They did.
They made big news. And
they hired Greg Berhalter.
Yes, the former U.S. men's national team coach, which to me seems like a huge move to increase the stature and profile of a franchise that often gets overlooked in this market. I wonder what you think it does for that franchise.
I think it's a really good hire for that franchise. I think that you're bringing in a guy that had a lot of success in the MLS when he was in Columbus, and I think he's done some good things in the MLS. I'm delighted that he's no longer coaching the U.S. men's national team. I was delighted they went out and got Mauricio Pochettino. I think he's a really good manager. I'm looking forward to seeing the U.S. and how they look with him.
What was the biggest knock against Berhalter as a national coach?
Well, I mean, there was tons of problems. He ran it. You know, he was a real player's coach, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. The one player that he kind of turned on was Giovanni Reyna, and it was a real scandal because Reyna's parents are both U.S. internationals, and his dad was really close with Berhalter. They like knew the mothers were like best friends, and so he got into it with the kid, and he benched the kid, and then the kid's mom came out with a story about him abusing his then girlfriend before they got married. It ended up being
ugly. Sounds ugly.
Like soccer moms. You know, I mean, it was a terrible, to me, the reason I didn't care for him was simply, you know, he never tried to resolve or solve or fix the fact that they did not have a goal scorer, a forward, and he tried three different players while at a World Cup. You're not going to discover who you either have an idea of who your guy is and you go to a World Cup and you play the guy and you take the lumps, or you don't start starting different players every time you play a game in the World Cup. Wrong spot to figure that out, coach. But anyway, I think he'll be really good at this job. I also think he'll have tons of time. He's reporting directly. They made him the director of football, which means he runs everything,
yep,
and he goes right to the owner. It's a lot. It's like two jobs. But I think, Frankie Klopas is currently filling in as
he's still going to be involved, correct?
And Frankie will be,
yeah.
And I love,
he's going to be there forever.
I love Frankie Klopas. He should be there.
He's an institution.
He is a great Chicagoan.
Yep.
And I hope that, I hope it works out for them.
Last thing on this, what would you think was the biggest appeal for the Fire to hire Berhalter? Was it just the stature? Was it something specifically?
I think partly his stature, but also the fact that he's done well in that league before. I don't think Berhalter was going anywhere else. So I think he's been, you know, I didn't like, it's not like they hired, you know, Jurgen Klopp, who was hired today to oversee Red Bull International. Jurgen Klopp was the Liverpool manager. The U.S. national team attempted to hire him before getting Pochettino. But I think that, you know, he's different level stuff. This guy's good. He'll be good.
Good.
He'll be a good manager.
That's a great move for the Fire. It was worth bringing up because it did get make national headlines because of who they hired.
He was with the U.S. Men's National.
It's great.
Yeah. He ran his course as a U.S. Men's National Team manager, and they probably should have let him go. And instead, they waited until they failed at the Copa America, and then they got rid of him. They should have hired Jesse Marsh, who is a really good Wisconsinite. I think he's from Racine, Wisconsin. And he was a manager at Leeds at one point. He's a good and they hired him in Canada after the U.S. didn't hire him, which was a mistake. But that's okay. Pochettino's pretty good.
Good deal.
All right. Great stuff. Glad we got to that. And I believe it's a Layla Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
So we got a huge day today. It is a Wednesday. It's a Layla Wednesday. Christmas has arrived early yet again. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.